call this meeting of August 4th to order. I ask you to rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Could we have a roll call of members, please?
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Mr. Randall has asked to be excused. Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa will be a few minutes late this evening. Mr. Sigler?
Went to the bathroom.
Mr. Stevenson?
Present.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Burbank has also asked to be excused. Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Hattery?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. McDessie has asked to be excused. Ms. McBean Claiborne?
I'm present.
Mr. Kaplink-Allaire?
Present.
We have 11 members present.
Before we proceed with the rest of our business, I'd like to take a moment of silence. We lost one of our fellow county employees, a longtime employee, Doug Rutan, from Department of Emergency Response. Had a short illness and died yesterday, so we'll take a moment to remember him and his family. Thank you very much. Petitions and communications and notices?
Communications are on the desk.
We have no special orders of the day, but we'll proceed to privilege of the floor for the public. We have one person signed up, and others are welcome to speak if they feel so called. Michael Lane from Dryden.
Good afternoon, everyone. Michael Lane from the village of Dryden. I saw a political cartoon, which I thought was quite appropriate. It said, the good news is the recovery is over. But the question is, can we survive the recovery after the recession? And I probably screwed that up a little bit, but that was exactly the idea. The recovery can be as bad as the recession itself. And I think when the county looks at its budget, I think it's really necessary to think about that. Even though things are starting to look a little brighter out there, housing market has been holding its own in Tompkins County, and some of the businesses haven't been hit as hard as in other parts of the country. We still need to think what's going to happen here in the next year or two that's going to be even a greater impact on the county budget. We're seeing our county administrator has told us that we expect a shortage in the sales tax revenues this year of a significant amount. I think what it means for a county like ours in a situation like this, in order to survive the recovery, is to be able to get back to basics. There are so many things that a forward-looking progressive legislature like this would like to do, but in times of difficulty, the horns have to be pulled in. And we have to be able to think about keeping our public safety intact, keeping our roads and bridges maintained, making sure that people's health is taken care of through our health department, and that the basic safety net for people at the in social services is maintained. There'll be time in the future for other special projects and other new initiatives, but now's not the time. Back to basics, in my opinion, is what the county needs to be thinking about this year in its budget process and trying to hold the line. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Is there anyone else here who wishes to speak under privilege of the floor of the public? If not, we'll move on to privilege of the floor for legislators. Greg?
Mike, excuse me, I'd just like to follow up on your moment of silence for Doug Rutan. I have some memorial service arrangements that I'd like to detail. The memorial service will be held Thursday, August 6th, 7 p.m., the Marathon Baptist Church, Main Street, and Marathon. From 5 to 7, there'll be calling hours, I believe also at the church. And I have information on donations, should anybody be inclined to to do that.
Thank you. And you had worked with him, right, Greg?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Any other legislators wish to speak? Frank Proto, Martha.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My consumer moment for a moment. This is with regard, no surprise, to NYSEG. You should have received, if you haven't, you'll be blessed and receive it shortly, in your most current bill, a little orange, yellowish orange notice that we are all going to receive a 2% surcharge on the delivery portion of our gas bills. Apparently, the state of New York, by the way, this is not anything to blame NYSEG for. They're just a vehicle. The New York State Legislature has decided that they need some money, and they've decided that the best way to get it is to surcharge your utility bill. And if you haven't opened your envelope yet, you should. You'll see this notice in there. NYSEG is very careful to describe it as nothing that they had anything to do with. It was something that they were required to do on behalf of the legislature. Goes on and on. That's an indirect tax, by the way. The second item I wanted to mention to you is it'll take place on September 18th. I'll mention this again at the next two meetings we have because some of you like to go to this. And with all due respect to individuals in the gallery, I know Mike Lane has attended this in the past. On September 18th at Myers Park in Lansing will be the watch fire for the veterans in the county. And it's a wonderful event to go to. If you've never been to it, you might enjoy coming down and meeting and greeting and shaking hands with a number of the people who have served throughout this county. September 18th, the official start time is 6 o'clock, but that fire usually burns all night. Right, Mike? Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, Frank. Martha Robertson?
Thank you. I had the privilege of going down to Washington last Thursday. July 30th was the 44th birthday of Medicare, our government-run health care program that millions of Americans are delighted about. And in fact, so delighted that they tell Congressman Mike Arcuri, for example, please don't get the government involved in health care. You better not touch my Medicare. You know, they think that Medicare is so good, they don't want the government to get involved in it. We were celebrating the birthday of Medicare by lobbying our congressional and senatorial delegation, and I had the privilege of meeting with 30 of us, meeting with some staff from Senator Gillibrand's office, and much more satisfying, the about hour and a half we had with key staff from Mike Arcuri's office, and then 45 minutes with the congressman himself. So he is listening to constituents. They're, as everybody knows, they're back in their districts this month and prepared to hear from constituents more directly back in their districts. Now, I just wanted to say that coming down here, listening to NPR, I heard a very disturbing report of basically people hijacking these kinds of town hall meetings and just shouting and booing and not letting the anybody actually speak about the issues. In particular, they talked about a meeting with Arlen Specter in Philadelphia at the Constitution Center, where people, when the director of the Constitution Center, and I say this because this is a mark of the extremists we're talking about, the director of the Constitution Center was introduced, and people in the audience booed. I take that as booing about the Constitution. They went on to shout about Obama not being a citizen. So these are the folks who have decided it's time to hijack the public discourse, the public town meetings about health care in our country. I have a simple message. Keep doing it. It will backfire. a huge majority of Americans want a true health care reform, including a public option. And I don't think this kind of tactic will help the conversation. I would also just let people know that Secretary of Health and Human Services Sebelius had a great interview on NPR. You can get listen to that online if you happen to miss it. But there's some good news, and I wanted to pass on that among things, if you're going to call your senators and representatives in Congress, the Kucinich Amendment is a very important amendment that passed the House Committee on Education and Labor last week. 27-19, bipartisan amendment that would allow states to provide health care to its own, to their own citizens, allow each state to decide if they want a single-payer system. And that's important because there was a report issued a couple weeks ago by the governor's office, Governor Patterson's office, comparing the costs of four different kinds of systems for New York, and found that a single-payer system, basically Medicare for all, once it got ramped up, would save $20 billion a year for New Yorkers. So I think the Kucinich Amendment is something very specific that we can ask our representatives to support, and I urge people to make their views known. The Congressional switchboard is 800-473-6711, and that's just one of many numbers, but I hope people do make their views known with the congressional and senatorial representatives this year.
Thank you, Martha. Carol?
Yeah, I had two items I'd like to talk about. One is I would like to wish a really heartfelt happy 90th birthday to my mother-in-law, if you'll join me, who is here in Ithaca celebrating for the week. Ruth Mazzarella is still doing volunteer work at the hospital and the library 2 days a week. And she specifically congratulates us on passing our health care resolution and wants us to know that without her good health care, she would be either blind or dead. She is just this vibrant, amazing woman who's lived an amazing 90 years, and that is a feat worth recognizing. So thank you for helping me. I also wanted to let you know that Charlie Troutman from the Science Center has invited all of us to the opening of a Science Center exhibit that was funded in large part with a grant from the occupancy tax funds. We are all invited. This is an exhibit opening for the asteroid station on the Sagan Planet Walk. It features a real 100-pound or 40-kilogram 4.5-billion-year-old meteorite right here on Seneca Street in between the Hilton Garden Inn and Moosewood Restaurant right there near the Tompkins Trust Company drive-thru. This will Monday, August 17th at noon. It's the oldest thing you'll ever touch. The funding for the Sagan Planet Walk, we have helped with that funding over 13 years with a total of $20,000 since 1996, including one of the planet stations, the rack card for the entire exhibition, a free cell phone audio tour, which features the voice of Bill Nye, the science guy. If you're looking to try it, I can give you a phone number, 703-637-6237. And a passport to the solar system guidebook that we've helped with before. The most recent assistance is the asteroid station. This activity is a great example of edutourism. It presents something that is truly unique about our place in a new and interesting way that visitors and residents alike can learn from and enjoy. It combines education, nature, exercise, because you walk along the planet walk, art, and builds on the fame related to Carl Sagan in the naming of the walk. And I see this as an example of the best of how the occupancy tax funds are able to promote tourism, attract visitors, and please our residents with something that can't be seen anywhere else. So hope you'll all come.
Thank you, Carol. Mike Sigler?
Wait, can I just say one other thing is... coming up later in the meeting, one of our resolutions, we have a visitor who needs to leave for a leave at 6:30 for a meeting. If
we will do our best to move it up. I see Mike and I see Leslie's hand. Mike Sigler?
I just wanted to agree with Martha in the respect that our congresspeople are back. I hope they do go and meet with their congresspeople to voice their concerns if they are concerned about the health care that's going to go through Congress, or if they have worries about losing their health care, they should show up and meet their congresspeople and tell them, hey, I'm worried, I'm scared. As for some of the vitriol at these meetings about people being angry, I think people have a right to be angry. I don't think there should be any surprise to people after 8 years of meetings with George W. Bush that, wow, other people are angry in the country as well. Maybe we should listen to them. Just last year, the President of the United States said, I want you to go out there and get in their faces. Well, you know, I'm sorry that you reap what you sow. That's all I can say to you on that. He also said, I'm the only thing standing between you and the pitchforks. Again, well, I'm sorry, you reap what you sow. There's a lot of angry people out there. A lot of people are not sold on a public plan or on universal health care. And those people are clearly going to get out there and make their feelings known. I urge them to do it respectfully, and I urge them to stay on the topic of health care. And hopefully this bill, which apparently nobody's read, will be defeated.
Thank you, Michael. Leslie?
Speaking of angry people.
I'm not angry.
No, I'm not saying you are. Carol, I was listening to your shout-out to your mother-in-law and kept thinking, wow, what a perfect candidate for the Distinguished Youth Award. 91 years old and still going,
yeah.
Volunteering and everything. I like it. I wanted to say that, or remind folks that tonight is National Night Out. That's where the Speaking of Angry People came from. you all know it certainly is a time of helping neighbors get together, getting to know each other, part of our crime prevention, part of working towards establishing more safe communities. You know, there are National Night Out events happening throughout the county. There are two in the city of Ithaca, Titus Towers and at Conway Park, and hopefully we get out in enough time that we can all go by and meet and greet the folks who we represent here as a large body on this legislature. And thanks to our law enforcement officers as well as our emergency services members who work very hard in helping the education around crime prevention, the education around starting up neighborhood associations, and about looking out for each other, and we want to continue to encourage that. So I just wanted to let you all know that tonight is National Night Out. No angry people there.
Thank you. Are there other legislators who wish to speak on the privilege of the floor? Kathy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to tag on to what's been said about the town hall meetings, I heard about a recent development today that I think is a good one all the way around, and that is some representatives suggested that people sign in on their way in and wear name tags. Everybody knows that when you can be identified by name and when you can see someone else's name, it tends to lead to more civil discourse. And in addition, at the beginning of the meeting, there was an announcement made, a statement made, talking about the history of public discourse, going back to the beginnings of democracy, how literally public meetings, town meetings, are a calling out of people, that people are called out, and that those who respond have the right, the opportunity to come and speak their mind, and that doing so is a right and a privilege and one that should be respected, and that those who value democracy will allow people to speak, will allow people to respectfully state their opinion, and will make sure that everyone who wants to speak has a right to speak. This statement, and of course, that's not verbatim, this is just what I heard about, really made a difference in the tone of the meeting. And for those who believe, as I do, that there was some intent involved in the groups that arrived, and the intent was to actually disrupt the message that our representatives were trying to bring to us, the message being, we need national health care, we need health care reform now, that intent was disrupted by this acknowledgement of the very real premise upon which our democracy is based, and that is civil discourse. So I think we found a way to break that logjam, and who knows what's to come, but I think if we just keep taking the high road, keep expecting the best of each other, and come up with processes that are consistent with democratic values, that we can find a way to allow, ultimately, the public discourse to rise to the level that allows us to make, I think, a reasonable decision, which will be health care reform for all.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks.
Anyone else wish to speak on the privilege of the floor? Thank you, then. We'll move on to report from municipal officials. Bill Goodman is here from the town of Ithaca.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For those legislators who don't know me, my name is Bill Goodman. I've been on the town board for the town of Ithaca for about a year and a half now. And I thought for my update today, I'd just give you a little rundown of what some of the committees that I'm involved with are doing that might be of interest to folks throughout the county. I'm chair of the town's Codes and Ordinances Committee, and currently we're working on a stream setback law to regulate development along the many streams in the town. And so we're trying to protect the buffer zones, the riparian habitat along the streams, and improve water quality, both for the streams and, of course, ultimately for the lake. And I'm on the town's planning committee. Currently, we're reviewing the Route 96 corridor study, which the county was involved with, as well as the city, town of Ithaca, and town of Ulysses. And so we've started our initial review of the draft of that, and the planning committee will then be deciding whether to make a recommendation to the town board about the results of this study. For those who might not know, one of the recommendations was nodal development around the hospital, and as well as a node around Jacksonville. Also in the planning committee, we're dealing with a request from some of our residents on West Hill for a moratorium on development on West Hill. There's currently two projects that are being proposed. One is the Holochuk Homes project up by the hospital, and I think that's about 105 units, single-family homes. And then there's the 400-unit Caramore project, which is being proposed for the north side of Route 79 across from Eco Village, which is actually where I live. And so we've had some neighbors from the West Hill area who are concerned with the amount of traffic that those new developments might engender, and so they're asking us to consider a moratorium. We're talking about that right now in the planning committee, and again, we'll make some recommendation to the town board in the near future. And then I'm also chairing an ad hoc committee on trails in the town, and trying to look at the trails that we do have and places where we can add new trails. So currently the town is working on using money from Congressman Hinchey, the Gateway Trail, which would go from lower Buttermilk Falls up the hill past the Emerson Power Train up to up towards the Ithaca College area. And ultimately that would connect down in the valley. It would connect to the Black Diamond Trail as well in the future. And then we've recently completed a survey of residents who live along the trails in the town, the South Hill, Northeast Trail, and the East Hill trails. And we're compiling the results now, but the results have been very favorable. People who live along the trails of their experience using the trails and living near them. And we're hoping to take the results of that survey and go to other places in the town, and particularly right now we're looking at West Hill to build some new trails, both for recreation and for pedestrians and bikes to use, bicyclists to use in commuting during the good weather. And let's see, I think that's about it for right now. If there are any questions, I'd be willing to entertain questions.
Thank you, Bill. Carol? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just one brief thing. I know on the stream setback, I saw mm-hmm. something recently that the state, because the DEC is either has passed or is talking about passing a standard 100-foot setback, and I know some of yours may be less, so I just don't know if that's something that has come up since you started looking at this?
Yeah, I hadn't heard about that. I'll look into that. We are proposing a scheme that depends upon the size of the watershed that for streams. I think it's where the watershed is under 35 acres. It's the zones. We have two zones. We have a zone one where a lot of things are prohibited, and then a zone two where some more things are permitted. And the width of the zones vary depending upon the size of the watershed. So we have three levels of watersheds: under 35, then I think it's 35 to 200 acres, and then over 200 acres. And so as the size of the watershed gets bigger, the amount of the buffer zone gets larger too. But I will check into that. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. If people have more questions, they can contact you afterwards.
Thank you. Appreciate you
coming. We're going to move on to a brief presentation from our Board of Elections, hopefully about a five-minute presentation. We've gotten our information in the packets already, actually, with a cover note. I sent you all a note. As I begin to prepare, I sent you all a note reminding you that this is not a budget presentation, although they may allude to some of the things in their budget for next year. It's really more programmatic themes for what happened this year, accomplishments, and going into next year, some of the exciting things that are moving forward, and some of the challenges. So it's not their defense of their 2010 budget by any means. So Steve and Elizabeth, welcome. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. Good evening. Well, as you know, with new voting equipment comes new procedures, so we thought we'd better give you a little insight of what's coming up ahead. And as you know, what we do at the Board of Elections has been and still continues to be registration of voters and maintaining the voter database, dealing with election issues and petitions and financial disclosure. But what has been going on for the past couple of years is now we're dealing with poll sites and contracts and working with all kinds of outreach groups to present the new voting equipment and teach us how we're going to be voting on now, and that's going to be on paper. And through all this, we've maintained our staff of six people, and it's a bipartisan team on all sides, even down to our inspectors and our machine technicians.
Okay, this November, we're going to begin a pilot program in the city of Ithaca only, and in that pilot program, we're going to be using optical scan voting machine only, no letter machines anymore in the city of Ithaca. Outside of the city of Ithaca, for this year, it's going to be pretty much the same as it was last year, where we have a ballot marking device for people that are unable to use the lever machines, along with the lever machines that most people would use. This is the machine right here that they'll be using in the city. On the left-hand side, as you're looking at it, there is the ballot marking device part of it that a person with disabilities would use to interact with it so that they can mark a ballot for them, which can be scanned. The right-hand side, as you look at it, is the part that most voters will interface with, and that's where, after they mark their ballot, they will insert it into the scanner. The scanner will tabulate their ballot and then deposit it in the scanner.
We also had to change all our poll sites as far as how we were going to set them up. We had to draw each one to scale, and we have been working on a CAD program in order to center how the voter flow and make sure that ballots aren't leaving the room and that we have full custody of every vote. And so this is an example of Fall Creek School, and everything is in a circle. So as you come in, you're going to be seeing a DVD setup. We've been doing our own video shooting, and we have training video that we're also editing at this point. And you will go in and have an instruction and a poll site manager instead of your four usual inspectors.
In our staffing under the new system, by changing the way that we staff the sites, we're going to probably instead of having four people for every election district, we're doing a combination of poll site managers and only a couple of inspectors per election district. And when all is said and done in that, when we get full implementation, we're probably going to be using only about 16 more election workers on Election Day. This, you know, we've talked with people from other states that are doing optical scan. They're using an awful lot more people, but in order to try to keep costs to a minimum, we're trying to see if we can get it done with fewer. After the election, this is another new component of election law. We have to do a random audit of all of the ballots that were tabulated in 3% of the machines. It may only be one machine initially, but then we have to make sure that we audit every race that's run, at least in one machine. So we're probably, like this year, if we were doing a full rollout this year, we'd probably be auditing about 18 machines. And then if the tabulations don't match up, it means we have to audit more. And so if these tabulators don't work the way they're meant to be, we could be hand counting a whole election. So that's another unknown that we're kind of going into. Hopefully the machines perform as promised.
But remember, we always have the paper backup, so it won't be a problem in anyone's vote. As far as getting any help, pilot projects are moving forward before the state can hand down anything to their resources to help us. So we've been preparing all kinds of reports, and this is some examples of them. This is a security seal report. We have many seals on the machines that have to be accounted for all the time. And, of course, we have to know where the ballots are at all times. This is another report prepared by us. Ballot logs, custody, chain custody, who's had them, when, how many go out, how many come back in. We had to change the way you sign in because if you vote a ballot and you make a mistake on it, you're allowed to have another ballot, and you can have up to three ballots. We also do a road check for any damage when the machines are delivered. And the traveler is something that goes with the machine, and it's all the information, supplies of the total machine and their ballots. And this is what the state gave us after all of that. And that was a draft.
Yeah, this is just a draft. We haven't seen anything.
Yeah. So as you can see, we're ahead of the game.
As I mentioned earlier, we're working real hard to minimize our expenses and work within the confines of the budget and seeking out any opportunity that we can to save money.
Thank you, Elizabeth and Steve. I had an opportunity to preview your video that you're working on in-house, and it's a great start and using local people who actually are sitting at the polls, that kind of thing. So it would be very useful for people coming in getting a quick briefing as to what's new and what's changed. Have Frank Proto, then Mike Sigler.
Nice presentation. As some of us that have had a chance, we were samples. We had a chance to be the guinea pigs on one of the machines. It was quite interesting to slip that ballot into the machine and watch it get eaten. A serious question and then a little bit of a facetious one. On the material that the voter will review in this write-up that you gave us, some of the material is minimal type size or print size. Are these going to be a size that somebody my age is going to be able to read without having to need a magnifying glass?
What age is that, Frank?
Well, we're accommodating that in a couple of ways. One, for anybody that's using the BMD because of visual problems, there's a lot of visual aids with the BMD. We also have very large print instructions for using the BMD for somebody that might need to use it. For the other ballots where people are marking them in voting booths, a lot, if not all, of our voting booths will have a magnifier with it so that they can use the magnifier to double-check if they're having trouble reading the ballot.
Okay. Next serious question. Somebody who's blind, will there be assistance for that individual?
Well, the whole point of the new voting system is that anyone with a disability should be able to vote on their own. So the machine really accommodates up to someone that's, you know, a quadriplegic can vote with a sip and puff mechanism.
Okay. So. Now, the first personal question. It probably hasn't gone unnoticed that there's at least 75 elections that are going to take place certainly this year, and we're going to have a couple next year as well. Those of us that in the past have participated in getting numbers and sending them to, phone calling them in to wherever they had to go so that we knew who might be winning and who might not, and who won at the end of the night, or at least how it looks. How quickly will the results of this be available so we can get, this is personal now, so that anyone...
This year, I can't say that it'll be any quicker. I mean, we do pretty well. We generally have final results by an hour after the poll close. I anticipate when they get the new election management software next year that it might be quicker as soon as, because, but we'll still have to wait for the flashcards that have come out of the machine at the end of the night to get down to our office where they can be read. So,
it's a really good question. If there's, the audit goes on at the same time that we're counting any other ballots, like absentee ballots, that type of thing. So it's going on at the same time because one, we can't certify the election unless both meet the standards. So.
The only concern I have is some of us that have been invited to plumbers and steam fitters might not be able to withstand the extra hour wait. So just an aside.
I had Mike Sigler and then Dooley, and we do want to try to move to our next part of our meeting so we get the resolution that someone's waiting for before us. Mike?
The new ballots that we're using, exactly where are those going to be used? How many new ballots? How many ballots do you have to buy? At what cost? I mean, how much is each ballot? And then finally, well, let's answer those two first.
Okay. Well, we're supposed to, the suggested amount that we're supposed to buy is 110% of the registered voters in that district.
Okay. And how many districts are we doing?
Well, there's 74 election districts.
19 this year.
So now that's going to be extra money per ballot. What is it, 60 cents per ballot?
Yeah, about 60 cents.
Is that coming out of your bottom line? Because that's 60 cents that you wouldn't have, per ballot, that you wouldn't have had to spend before we got these new machines, right?
Right.
So is that coming out of your budget?
That is part of the chargeback to all the towns. So actually the city will pay that amount this year.
And Dooley?
Are the forms that you're creating still in progress?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Would you consider having, for each line when somebody has to sign, have them designate the party that they're representing also on the form?
Yeah, we already changed that.
Okay. Yeah.
But thank you. We're looking for all kinds of suggestions.
Leslin.
Elizabeth, did you say the earlier that you can get up to three of the ballots, and you said now that it's recommended you buy 110% of the registered voters in the district.
Right.
That doesn't seem like enough, but okay.
I know. But then if you take in participation, it should be enough.
Okay. I have Carol Chalk, then Mike Hattery, then Martha.
Yeah, I know that we can't use this for official information yet, but please alert us. I would like to see the day come when we can collect email addresses from people and communicate with them about elections and procedures and begin to communicate with people by email rather than only by snail mail. And so please alert us.
We can do that at the demonstrations. We could have, you know, a place for your email on the demonstrations.
I would love to see that if it's practicable.
Thank you, Carol. Mike Hattery?
Just briefly, a little aside. I appreciate the quality of the work that both of our commissioners do, but I wanted to mention I've run into commissioners from both sides of the aisle that serve in other counties, and they've all had positive things to say about Elizabeth's integrity and quality of her, a high level of her knowledge and her willingness to share with other commissioners, and they all look to her as a resource. I wanted to thank her for the quality and integrity with which she does her job. Thank you.
And Martha.
On 100% of registered voters, I mean, not that many people make mistakes. It's only if you make a mistake do you get up to, you want to have a redo on your ballot. Okay.
So the problem is if you mark your ballot and there's any kind of ambiguous mark, it's the scanner won't take it.
Okay.
So if you make a mistake, you can't cross it out and go to the next. You have to start with a whole new ballot.
Right. Well, a lot of us, we hope, with proper education, both before they go to polls and at the poll site, that they will be able to avoid some of the pitfalls here.
So anybody, any citizen, if they want to go in and look at the machine, they can go to your office?
Sure.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, this is a significant culture change from our lever machine. So
yes,
all of us can educate ourselves and all of us can educate our constituents as best we can about what to expect when they walk in those doors. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Steve. I'm going to move the agenda around a little bit with everyone's...
Ask a question. And Elizabeth and Steve, the education you're talking about, there'll be advertisements and stuff going on so people know where these are happening. Is there anything happening just yet? Because having gone and tried the machine myself, and I'm a good reader, I think people are going to need some time.
We have a session scheduled at Lifelong on August 17th currently. I'm not sure what time.
I think it's 10 to 2.
10 to 2. And we are scheduling a lot of other ones as you get into October. And certainly if you have any suggestions, let us know. We'll go to any size group to take the machine. We have the ability to take the machine to where you are. So
okay.
Let us know where you want us.
That'd be great. Thank you.
And Kathy had a question. Kathy Lucifer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you all have a terrific website. I was wondering if this report might be available there or if that report might be made available to people.
Yeah, we are going to have, we've already shot a video with Larry Roberts in the Finger Lakes Independent Center, which as we get closer to the election will be available on our website for people to look at. And we'll also have other things that we're shooting now to educate the voters on our website.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to move on to Resolution A, if we could, from, let's see, that's on consent, isn't it?
There's no consent.
No.
There's
okay, that's Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Carol, you want to go ahead?
Okay, yeah. Since Pam Magacy, who's the chair of the committee, is not here, I will, as vice chair, introduce this. After this was referred to Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, we met on Friday and passed this unanimously. There were four of our five members present, and I'll introduce it, and then should it be seconded, I will then talk a bit more about it.
This is the revised version we got in our packet.
This year's a revised version in your packet. It's Resolution A, endorsing the grant application of Clarity Connect, Inc. to the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, which is NTIA, Broadband Technologies Opportunity Program, which is BTOP, and to the Broadband Initiatives Program, BIP, for the purposes of expanding broadband access to unserved and underserved communities of Tompkins County. And I so move.
Seconded by Dooley. Are there questions, or okay. Do you want to start with comments?
I'll say a few words about it. We PDEC met for, it was over an hour, about this. This seems to be it. This program is the opportunity to apply for federal dollars to bring here to this region of the company of the country. And it will be a very competitive process, $7.2 billion available, of which over $4 billion will be given out in this first round, similar to programs like the FAA that leave a very short time frame for applications. This the process here left only a bit over a month, and I think are still issuing some clarifications to their guidelines and refinements to the point system. We had a lot of discussion. There's been information that's come out, so I won't say a whole lot about the background unless you ask questions. Our discussion centered around is this kind of endorsement distinguished from an RFQ that the county is issuing? This is not a county project. It is an endorsement. And Paula had some very eloquent words to say about that. We talked about the word endorsement as a word and what that means and if that carries any legal weight. And again, Jonathan Wood was there and can give us more about that if you would like. But in this context, that is the word requested by the program for such support. As indicated by bodies like this, and that it does not carry any particular weight, like you endorse a check. It's not a legal agreement that we will make good on the application should money come to this company and then they don't finish delivering. Similarly, the use of the word public-private partnership is one that David Squires weighed in on we're interested. They are interested in pursuing this partnership. We have not signed an MOU or made particular promises about our part of that partnership, other than the fact that we, as stated in the resolution, about why we would like to see this come here. We learned that many private providers are not applying, don't want to apply, because of the onerous requirements, technical requirements of the grant, the point system, and the way in which the grant process requires them to make their networks available to other private providers and work specifically with them. We did learn just a new piece of information. We learned yesterday that Cayuga County, in a unanimous way, signed on to this. So that's what we learned at committee. I will say for myself, think of stagecoach roads, canals, train tracks, telegraph lines, telephone lines, highways. This is the highway of the future. Those geographic regions that had access to those kinds of services in each era enjoyed economic development in a way that regions that didn't have access to that didn't have. And this is it. I think that this is the way to sign us onto the new century and get some money available for this here that will stimulate competition and that this is something we ought to do. So I urge you all to support it.
Thank you, Carol. Further discussion? Julie Kiefer?
Carol, I'd like to offer what I hope you'll consider friendly. In one of the whereases, the one that begins, whereas Clarity's partnership program will include components to provide education, there's the term e-government, and I don't think that's particularly a well-known term. And so, if it would be agreeable with you, I'd like to insert parenthetically after that something that might help clarify it, and I would recommend electronic access to government information, services, and programs.
To government or local government? Or just
government.
To government. I certainly consider that friendly. My understanding of what they mean by...
Well...
Oh, I consider it friendly.
Correct?
Yeah, it is correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just the term that's used in the grant, so...
Mm-hmm. So it was accepted as friendly, and of course, Julie's a seconder, so she accepts as friendly. So that's part of it now. Is there any other comment before we proceed?
Could you repeat it? I'm sorry.
Electronic access to government services...
Information, services, and programs.
Government information, services, and programs. Ask others? We have a few minutes. We want to get everyone's comments in. I have Jim, Mike, and then Frank.
Thank you. First of all, I know who this person is, but I think if he's going to be in the discussion that you should identify himself for.
Yeah, I'll call on Chuck if he's needed.
The board. Okay. And my question is, just what does public-private partnership mean in 100 words or less?
Under which whereas are you looking at?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Good
do we have Chuck describing
it? It's a partnership, Jim.
I'm
Chuck Bartosz is here, who's one of the prime movers behind this application for federal stimulus funding. Chuck, do you want to give us a quick...
Yeah, this is Chuck. I'm Chuck Bartosz, resident of Dryden. From Clarity Connect, sorry. Okay, thanks. A public-private partnership, to some extent, is a buzzword that's real popular in politics these days, but really what it means, it can be two ways. It can either be a public entity that has private partners that are going to be doing some of the work, or it can be a private entity that's the lead that's working closely to do the work that they're trying to do with other partners, generally speaking to the benefit of the partners that they're trying to work with. So there's no particular legal weight to the term, though.
Further questions? I have Mike Hattery.
Thanks. This is probably for you. I understand that because of the tightness of the deadlines, we don't have a proposal to look at that we are going to pass a resolution in support of. That happens. Can you give us some idea under your concept that's going to be conveyed in the proposal, who will control and maintain the infrastructure funded under this grant?
Sure. We're actually required as a lead agency. We're required to do that, and we cannot actually sell those facilities without federal approval, nor can we sell the company without federal approval. So it's actually an incredible burden in some sense that I'm taking on in order to do this project, because not many companies would do that, and not small companies at least. So, but we're fully responsible for making sure that that stuff happens. And part of the vetting process on their part is that they have to decide that we're, in fact, capable of doing that kind of thing.
I have a couple, Mike.
Sure.
Given that there was a late added whereas in here that you've sought and received support from other competing local and regional last-mile service providers, do we have any documentation about that support?
You guys don't have documentation per se. I've got documentation. I've got two things that are coming into me. Just to answer your full question, the application, of course, is due August 14th. We didn't get the rules till July 1st. It took at least a week for people to actually read it, and the actual application didn't come out till July 7th. The rules, the so-called NOFA, is 121 pages long. The guideline to fill out the thing is 118 pages, and the application itself, without you putting any words in, is 38 pages long. So it's an incredible process in terms of how much has to be done between now and when the thing is due. So a lot of things are happening, as you intuited already, in parallel. I've got verbal commitments from six providers, and I've got written commitments from three of those in terms of signing the actual wholesale agreements. One of the things we're trying to do is go beyond what the grant actually requires, so that I'm actually trying to include with the grant actual physical wholesale agreements already signed for distribution, which isn't required, and letters of support from these people saying that they actually support the application. There is some nervousness on some of them about being public about exactly who they are. I'm happy to share who they are privately, but there are issues with providers at this point, announcing, publicly, oh yeah, we're all the things that we might be doing with us, they might be doing with us. So, but I'm happy to talk to anybody privately about it. And by the way, by the time the application goes in, it's until I have the things signed and everything in order, it's a little tough. There's politics involved with people.
Sure.
Another question, Mike?
Pondering a request for executive session so we can find out who they are. But the last thing I'd like to ask is the resolution also characterizes that we acknowledge the need for broadband infrastructure development in the county to help bridge the digital divide for underserved and unserved communities. I assume you've done, or the county has done, and I'm not familiar with it, something to characterize the volume or nature of that need.
Can you repeat what you just said, that clause?
There's a clause about basically the need for this project, the number of underserved and unserved households. Can you give us...
Part of the parallel nature of this is that in order for us to apply for the grant and for the grant to actually be awarded, the federal government has absolutely no idea who's served and not served. They've got no numbers, no data at all.
Sure.
We actually have to provide proof of who is served and who isn't. And that's a parallel process where we're trying to, in some sense, guess where it is, do our engineering, meanwhile, test it out to be able to generate actual proof. Using the say Verizon's online database or Time Warner's online database, things like that. And what we're doing fundamentally is entering in addresses one at a time into the databases to see who's served and not served. That's one of the ways. Two providers that we're working with, Haefely TV, which serves part of the county, and as well as Tioga County, they've provided us their actual fiber maps in detail so that we can, because our desire is not to overbuild where somebody else is already there, and the grant doesn't let us overbuild where somebody's already providing service. So we've got lots of techniques where we're trying to build the data. We don't have numbers yet until I'm done.
So that's yet to be established, although it's treated
as
a given.
Yeah, long-winded way of saying that. But
thanks. Thanks, Michael. Frank Proto, then Jim.
Thanks, Mike. I have several questions and comments, so bear with me. Carol, first I'd like to thank you for going the extra mile to get questions that I've raised answered. I was not able to attend the Planning Committee meeting, and I think checking with the people that you did on my behalf, I think, deserves a thank you. And thanks for putting the information together. First of all, let me also say I'm certainly not opposed to broadband service in the county. Some of us have been on board with the need for the last 4 or 5 or 6 years because of the certainly through the work that some of us have done through the Universal Fund. But it shouldn't go unnoticed that I have a particular community. Danby has been working with Chuck for quite some time, and my understanding is that Dryden was awarded some monies through the state, about $400,000 that I think you may have had something to do with too. So from a personal standpoint, I want to make it publicly known that I'm not opposed to broadband service. The third item is I don't have an axe to grind with Clarity Connect. I've known Chuck for quite a few years, and I certainly don't have while I'm not intimately involved in your business, I don't have a plus or a minus with regard to the business as a whole. The concerns that I have are with the resolution. Endorse means endorse. I don't care how you pick the word apart. It means that we're backing something, that we don't have, the legal explanation may be one thing, doesn't commit us to anything, as Carol indicated before. But when a reviewer is reviewing paperwork at the federal or state level, wherever this is going to be reviewed, the word endorse jumps out off the page. And I understand from what Carol researched that it requires in the application that it say endorse. I wonder why. I think it's important also to know Carol's work also scoped out that if another provider or potential provider came forward and asked us to do a similar resolution, we probably would, and the wording probably would be the same. Now, I'm the reviewer in Washington or at the state level. Can you imagine having three or four resolutions in front of them or an application packets in front of them, all that say we endorse? I think that reviewer might begin to water down what that endorsement really means. And that's a concern of mine. Another of the concerns is, and we ran into this, if you recall, with the county towers when we were doing our own service, land use requires the towns to be involved. From what I read and some of the material that Carol and Mike Sigler provided, there were a whole series of different references that you could go to. While I'm not sure that this particular one is going to involve towers or poles, some of them do. And perhaps this one does in some regard, the backbone that Carol was describing. I suspect that the municipalities will have to be involved because some of them will have to provide through their code enforcement approval for doing something. Some of you that live in Dryden will remember certainly one of the most recent escapades was the tower by Ludgate's that was just recently approved in the town of Dryden. Ludgate's off of Hanshaw Road. So it's an unanswered question, but I suspect at some point that within the purview of a town's responsibility, because they have land use control, there's got to be some involvement with regard to the towns. If it involves franchises, like some of them do with cable, remember the franchises, Mike Lane? The franchise agreements with the towns for cable and some of the money that goes uncollected with NYSEG's poles throughout our community and our county that could have been a source of revenue had we been a little sharper in providing that access.
I'm not going to ask you to respond, Chuck, because these are more statements than questions. If you have to go, I understand, and we can rely on Greg as well, but we'll do a tag team if we have to.
And I'm down to my last one, Mike. You're safe. Because of all these things and because of the towns, and I understand Chuck is soliciting, I know from the town of Caroline, you're going to be soliciting a letter of endorsement or perhaps a resolution from them, I don't know which. You've already received from the town of Danby. The reason I mention it is because I know Rick Dietrich has been involved. I suspect that this proposal and this resolution would better come from the Council of Governments, their endorsement at the town level, because they are a body comprised of the various municipalities. That it would be appropriate for an endorsement from them as opposed to an endorsement by this body. But I don't know if that's planned. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But I think this is inappropriately put before us unless it is a generic resolution that supports broadband service without a particular endorsement of a particular company. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me move on to Jim Dennis.
My only question is, getting back to, you describe yourself as a lead agency, and my concern is, does anyone foresee, Jonathan, you, that Tompkins County would be obligated to perform any financial thing if, in fact, your group failed to deliver what you said you were going to deliver?
Let me let Jonathan answer that, actually.
No, I don't see this resolution imposing any legal obligation on the county, whether they, you know, whether the grant is received or not, and whether it's performed or not, even if it's received. Because, I mean, all we're doing is endorsing the application, if in fact the legislature chooses to do that.
Thank you, Jim. Leslin, then Martha, then Carol.
I think I had most of my questions answered, but I might have another one. So
okay. Martha?
Frank, if we want to have this kind of jump off somebody's desk as being unusual and endorsing isn't good enough, maybe we could do something like being wildly enthusiastic about the grant application of Clarity Connect. If that would be friendly, we could maybe do that. I would mention that the TCOG, next TCOG meeting happens after this grant is due, so that wouldn't help at all. The Dryden grant that's been mentioned, Chuck and councilperson Jason Leifer actually co-wrote that grant and received more than $400,000 in sort of what could be called a coup. Of course, it's been sitting in the morass of Albany, so the money hasn't been released yet, but that's not their fault. This is fundamentally, if this were to show up in Tompkins County, if you were to get this grant, this would be such a huge gift to especially the rural areas of Tompkins County. Our own town supervisor has dial-up service, and she is so frustrated. That's one reason they're sort of lobbying the Attorney General and trying to shake that money loose, because this is an equal opportunity, you know. Everybody is damaged by this if you live in a rural enough area where you just don't have the access. And it It hurts kids in terms of their schoolwork. It hurts kids. It hurts people and their business opportunities. This is especially a rural opportunity initiative. And I would just mention Reed, which is in the explanatory notes, so it won't necessarily go in the minutes, I believe. The last sentence, although helping to strengthen the viability of the application, this resolution is not an exclusive endorsement. Any eligible public or private entity that meets grant program requirements can request a similar statement of support from the legislature. So I think this is a terrific initiative. I just have one question. Chuck, how much money are you asking for?
We're probably asking for a total of, well, probably the total project's about $10 million, and we're probably going to be asking for around $8 million, roughly a third of which fundamentally is spent here in Tompkins County. And, of course, in order to do that, every town has committed to this. Any town we're serving has got to sign a resolution for us or the grant will be refused. And we cannot submit this grant proposal without towns signing on. That's grounds for immediate losing the grant opportunity.
Thank you.
I think Carol had her hand up briefly, but I don't know if it was just a nudge.
It was just a nudge. I know that... That Chuck has to be out in Frank's neck of the woods in Caroline at 7 o'clock. So I wanted to give him the opportunity if we have very specific questions for him. And then after that, I did want to, Mr. Chairman, ask if we could ask Jonathan to respond on some other points I'd like to ask him about.
All right, I move on to Leslie.
So I do want to hear Jonathan's response to some things. I am having my biggest difficulty with this is the public-private partnership, which I'm not sure I got that explanation. I actually appreciate the foresight to go for this. Certainly it's a service that the rural community does need, and I fully support that. But I'm having a hard time with public-private partnership, especially having not seen a proposal. When you start using partnerships and I haven't seen what is written, I get concerned.
So is the question behind the question, is
so
there...
The question, I need to understand what it really means, public-private partnership, and it's hard for me to sort of get that if I don't know what the public part is supposed to be.
By passing this resolution, if we vote for it, what is our partnership responsibility?
Jonathan. Is that a question?
Yes.
Okay. To me, public-private partnership is an ambiguous term without really any legal definition. I mean, what this says is that Clarity Connect desires a public-private partnership. You know, I find it hard to find a lot of meaning to that period, to be honest.
Okay, can I just take it out then? What is damage to the thing you
well,
have to take it out?
Well, that's, again, I mean, several times we had a very similar discussion at the committee, and I would refer to Chuck as to whether that was necessary for the grant. I mean, I don't see any legal implication by the words. And, you know, would he lose points for the grant? He would have to answer that.
Right. Thanks for that. That's exactly the thing. What something's required, not required, is a little ambiguous by itself. We're it's a national competition where we're competing against, you know, Compton, California, and everybody else in the world, so to speak, for the money. We're trying to make this as strong as possible to the grant evaluators. One of the things that they're basing it on is a couple of things. One is, how committed does the community seem to the project? If they're not committed, they don't care. If all you're saying is, well, you know, sure, bring us the money, that doesn't say a whole lot to them. In terms of public-private partnership, the stuff that's specifically written in the grant, the grant rules, basically, and it's, though you don't have to have a public-private partnership, it's strongly encouraged and repeatedly throughout both the rules around the grant, the actual grant application, and the guidelines for the grant. So it's basically strongly favored. You're much more likely to get the grant if it's a partnership like that. And though it doesn't have a specific meaning, nonetheless,
I take Jonathan's earlier answer that there's no legal obligation for us to do anything by approving this as part of the answer to that question. But I understand your concern still.
Yes.
Are you ready to move on, Leslie? I have Michael Sigler.
Yeah. I'll be quick just because I think my question kind of may answer that. Is to me, this is the public-private partnership is kind of a misnomer. It's public in the fact that it's going to increase competition because anybody can use it. if Time Warner came in and said, listen, we want to provide service, we're going to use this backbone. So in that respect, it's public. It's not public like Tompkins County is a public entity and we're going to be using it. We're going to benefit from it because we're going to have all these other guys saying, hey, I can use this backbone. Great. Time Warner, Verizon, you know, Finger Lakes Technology Group, all these different entities can say, okay, we want to provide service. We're going to use this public, quote-unquote, public backbone. Is that correct,
John? I think that's a real good description. Yeah.
My question for you is, why? Why you? Why are you doing this? If it's going to increase competition to you?
At the risk of sounding corny, because it's important, and it's important to me to do it. I've been working for so long, trying to bring broadband into the rural areas. And you know, by itself, you know, on an individual basis, it's almost impossible sometimes to justify doing it. Yet, it's been shown many times that it's a significant public benefit to do it, and I actually care about the community. So, like I said, at the risk of sounding corny about that, I actually believe that.
And instead of individuals going out and buying individual satellite dishes for their own service, this may be a benefit we can all join. Martha has the last comment. I'd like to go to a vote.
Just in a couple of the whereases, it talks about working with schools and reduce costs to families who can't afford broadband access. Those are the kind of things that I hear. And in the resolve, talks about working with other local municipalities. I mean, the issue of that the towns have to sign on recognizes that where it's a land use issue, then that's not what we're being asked to do. But towns will have to sign on and agree to that. So it's something that. So those are some of the components that I hear about that here sort of read into as public-private partnership.
Okay, I see Frank's hand, and then I actually do want to see if Greg Potter has anything to say since he's been following this.
Thanks, Mike. I think it's worth restating that because it has been mentioned that this involves a benefit for the rural areas. It certainly hasn't gone unnoticed by me. And if you go back and read, and we've been encouraging the board to do that, the Universal Fund provides for every one of those areas, rural access, underserved areas, the rural poor, hospitals, health care, and on and on, education. Every one of the items that is mentioned in there. But as I said before, this is not a non-endorsement for broadband by me. I'm certainly been one of the staunchest supporters of it, particularly because the areas I represent in some cases don't have it. And I don't want anyone to misunderstand it. My concern is that it seems to, by endorsing one applicant, it seems to scare off, put off, or whatever, foreclose the option on anyone else being considered. And I think Mike Hattery raised a very good question about what does the application contain, what will be provided. That's my only my major concern. And I'm glad to hear that it involves getting endorsements by the various towns, but I still encourage you to get an endorsement from the Council of Governments, which would be an appropriate place to do it, particularly if there's no financial commitment, because they don't have financial authority to commit us, and it would give us as a county one more layer of protection. Thank you.
I see Carol's hand, and I don't know if you have anything to add, Greg, from your perspective. Okay, Carol.
I just want to make sure people know that the Tompkins County Public Library, this is not the only application going in, and one does not preclude another. The public library will be applying as part of the whole statewide library group that they belong to. I'm hoping that we will still be able to look into whether our public safety, our emergency communications program, and anything to do with public safety will be able to apply in a future round, either on its own or through a statewide group. And it is my understanding that Chuck has to get past the first phase of the review. All of the applicants in a certain area, correct me if I'm wrong, but all of the applicants, as I read it, in a certain area, who get past the first round are then obligated to talk to each other and talk about how they will be working together and linking into each other's parts of the network. So I believe that that answers the question, are we endorsing one or over the other, because all those who get affected. And then my fourth point is the public portion of this, as I see it, is there's $7.2 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars of public funding going into this. And if that isn't public, that is a very public part of this partnership. So accepting that is certainly qualifies. Am I correct about the...
I actually would like to go to a vote if we could, okay. Unless it's going to sway someone's vote. Any more information? Are we prepared to vote? Kathy Lucerera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to explain my vote on this because this is one of those things where it sounds like you're voting against broadband if you vote against this. I have issues about transparency. For me, and I'm listening to this and I've been paying attention to it all along, and I know that there's been suggestions from some that we try and take out specific references to a specific company so we can show that we endorse the concept, and that's not acceptable. For me, the idea that we're voting on endorsing a proposal that we haven't seen and we're agreeing that there's support from other competitors that we don't know who they are, and the whereases, if you look at this resolution, there's five whereases that specifically mention Clarity Connect. Both of the resolves specifically mention Clarity Connect. And yet, we're saying this is an endorsement, and we explained, as I listened to the discussion, what it is not. And it sounds to me like we can parse words however we want to. We can be sarcastic and call it wildly enthusiastic. What we're saying is that we're endorsing this. And for me, the notion that we're endorsing something when we haven't read it and that it's a specific company when, okay, there's a lot of money available and we all want it. We want rural broadband for this area. I agree with Carol that the economic development opportunities are really important and it's important to our community to get it. Why does it have to happen this way? Could we have a TCOG meeting that was specially called? The steamroller of this is going on again, and it's a little bit disquieting to me because I'm pretty aware that the votes are here and that this is going to go on. I think that transparency of the nature of perhaps removing any reference to a particular company because of the deadline, right. It's the emergency management that this legislature has had to operate under for quite some time before the stimulus, before the economic downturn. It's business as usual. So for me, I want to support broadband. I've got a lot of people that I know that don't even get dial-up, and the dial-up that others get isn't worth using. You know, I love the economies of scale, the ideas of not having to have a satellite. There's, for me, too many unanswered questions. The notion, my dad always told me, if you're going to sign an agreement, you have to read it. I haven't seen the proposal that I'm endorsing. It's just, to me, there's too much lack of transparency about it. No offense to Chuck, and like I say, I'm pretty sure this whole thing's going to pass, but I just need to speak for those of us that like to pay attention to the details. I can't support it.
Are we ready to vote? Quickly, Martha?
Yeah, I'd be happy to ask Don Barber to call a special TCOG meeting. That'd be fine. You said August 14th is the deadline? All right, we'll do our best. I think we support grant proposals from our own staff all the time, and those do obligate us to things, and we haven't read those proposals. So, I think this is why this is important now is this is a big bucket of money that isn't coming along.
All right, quick clarification, Carol, and then I saw Mike had a raised hand.
I'm really disappointed, Kathy.
Are you surprised?
It was your enthusiastic endorsement of my bringing this up and the fact that we were going to get to refer it to committee.
Let's not personalize this,
I do want to tell people that I got interested in this because I attended a TCOG broadband access committee meeting. They're the ones who came to us and that got me interested. They are looking at this. Their towns are reporting to each other about what they're doing. But they referred it, so they've discussed this, had meetings, and referred it back to each town and county and municipality
because that's the appropriate place to pass the resolution. So I just, the point of information is that this really has been through TCOG and is discussed there.
Thank you. Mike Hattery, then I see Kathy's hand again.
Oh, yes.
Kathy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry for your personal disappointment about this, and I appreciate your telling of your story, how you arrived at this. To me, those are less relevant than the transparency piece. I heard Martha talk about how staff brings things forward all the time. That's county staff. It's different than a so-called public-private partnership, and I believe we have a fiscal and a moral responsibility to be more diligent in pursuing these things. This is largely irrelevant, but I needed to defend myself.
Thank you. Do we have enough information to vote? Dooley Kiefer.
I'm sorry we haven't heard anything from our IT person, although it might prolong our discussion. I was under the impression that the county, many legislators, over quite a few years now, have been hoping that our own staff would have the time to look into this in depth. But we have limited staff who has been fully committed to other projects, so we haven't been able to do it. And that made me so pleased to see that at least within our geographic area, there is one private company that's been willing to step up and take this challenge on. And as I read the background material that Carol's been sharing, I could see that it could only be good. I saw no downside. The transparency, the request to see an agreement, I wouldn't feel right asking to see this business person's application before it's ready to go, and it's not ready to go. But we're meeting tonight, and it's the time constraint that's happening again. I think that as I read the resolution, the discussion of public-private only struck me as those buzzwords that everybody wants to see, which is sort of what Mr. Bartosz said. And the idea that we're foreclosing other people from doing something is nonsense, in my opinion, because businesses move where they see that they can do something. And if other businesses see this as a good opportunity, they will move on it too. We may not know about it now. We'll know about it if and when it happens. At our advisory committees, I'll use the Water Resources Council as an example, we are used to being asked for letters of support for grant applications. They're much smaller in scope. They're much simpler to understand. But we don't shy away from that, even if we haven't all read the details, because we understand the purpose. And I think we all understand the purpose of this. So I hope people will reconsider if they're tending to vote against it and think long and hard about what this could mean to the whole community.
In reading the room, I think we're ready to go to a vote. All in favor of revised Resolution A, please raise your hand. Six, seven, eight, nine. And opposed? One, two, three. That passes 9-3. Thank you very much. And good luck with the grant. We go back to our regular agenda. Craig, did you have any other matter to state?
Just quickly.
Sure.
I just want to say that if there's anybody in the area who knows more about the broadband stimulus federal approach to trying to secure some of this funding, it is indeed Chuck. It's a very complicated project, and as an IT director, certainly the more competition and infrastructure that exists in the county, we're going to be better off with trying to utilize it. From my perspective, and the services that we provide, though, we're really on the fringe of this project.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure that everyone understands that. There may be some potential partnerships that can be discussed in the future as the project moves forward, but without definition, it's really hard for me to comment any further than that.
Thank you very much for that annotation. We'll go back to our regular agenda, which is Chair's report. Cheryl Nelson, who's coordinating a blood drive for the county, has reminded me that there is a week from today a blood drive over at the Tompkins County Public Library. It's Tuesday the 11th between 9 and 3:30, and there are slots open between 9:30 and 2:15 if you have any slack in your schedule. No other part of my report, but I do have a chair's appointment in your packet. You see that there's an application from Tim Grippen for the Tompkins County Workforce Investment Board. That's a designated seat and a chair's appointment, and I make that appointment tonight. So he'll be on the WIB. Move on to report from County Administrator Joe Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it is a brief report, as I always try to make it. First of all, I'd like to introduce our new program analyst, Kevin Sutherland, who's here with us tonight. You know, this effort has gone on for some time to try to define the position and find the right person for it, and I'm very confident that we have found the right position. Very quick in background, Kevin is a graduate of SUNY Oswego, just completed his master's at the Maxwell School at Syracuse, has worked in the city of Oswego for the New York State Attorney General at Cornell. He just served a four-month stint in a consulting engagement with TCAT, so he's familiar with some of the issues and individuals in the community. Was at one time the president of the student body at SUNY Oswego. So he, I think he has a nice combination of strong quantitative skills and excellent diplomatic people skills. I think he'll do very well in this job. So I did want to introduce Kevin to the legislature, and I'm sure you'll see much of him in the coming months. Quickly, in the way of updates on
only good updates.
My report is complete. Very quick updates on financial matters. We will, as we said in the last meeting, be going to the Budget Committee at its next meeting to talk about mid-year budget adjustments that we need to keep our budget in alignment this year. And we'll include with that a few policy recommendations that we will ask you to consider. And again, that will begin at the Budget Committee next Monday. The 2010 budget requests are now in. They are in my office. The process of our review is beginning right now. And I know we've talked about the rigor that process will entail, and it's already pretty rigorous. We've begun meetings with each department. They're already underway, and that will be a part of what we do over the next month, is to sit with each department to make sure we have a good understanding of what's being requested, both in the target budget and the OTRs, and have an understanding of impact. So that process is underway. And that completes my report.
Thank you. Any questions for Joe? Move on to our county attorney, Jonathan Wood.
Just one note. I wanted to let people know that the draft request for proposals to operate the recycling and solid waste center is now out on the street. That begins a 60-day comment period, which is the first step in improving our solid waste center. And that's it.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Is there a copy in the legislature? Could there be?
There certainly could be. I'm not sure there is. It's certainly out in electronic form. So I'll make sure that there's a hard copy in there.
We don't need all of the attachments to right. Certify things, just the body. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Jonathan. Thank you, Dooley. Moving on to Finance Director David Squire. No report. Thank you. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. I would like to, it was in your folder, Resolution F, ratification of the bargaining agreement, correction officers local 2062.
Is there a second to add? Nathan Shinagawa. Discussion? But adding to the agenda takes 10 votes. All in favor of adding to the agenda? Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. We'll put that on under the, I guess, Budget Committee report. Thank you.
I can.
Carol?
I'd like to withdraw the Resolution E, member-filed resolution.
Sure, that's done. Thank you. We have no consent agenda, so we'll move on to our regular agenda with the reports from committees. Carol, you can continue on with any further report from Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee.
No, we'll be meeting, was it August 12th, is it? A week from tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no questions, we'll move on to Budget, Capital, and Finance Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you. Resolution B. A budget adjustment appropriation of unspent funds from 2008 to various accounts, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Leslie Levine Claiborne. Is there discussion? Ready to vote on Resolution B? All in favor?
Aye.
Oh, sorry. This is a short form roll call.
Mr. Frodo?
Yes.
Mrs. Levine Claiborne?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be recorded as a no? That's unanimous. Thank you. On to C, which is also a short form roll call.
Resolution C, appropriation fund contingent fund lease agreement between the county and the Tompkins County Soil and Water Conservation District, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Greg Stevenson seconds. Is there discussion? Julie Kiefer.
Yeah. The way the resolution is worded, it is not clear to me whether the $31,585 is for the 5 years mentioned in the resolve or whether it is per year for each of 5 years, and I'd like the language to make it clear, but when the answer is known.
It is $31,000 for each year of the five-year contract.
So could you provide some wording to staff so that will be clear, please?
Well, I will.
Great. Thank you. Ready to vote? This is a short form roll call. Kathy?
Mr. Frodo?
Yes.
Mrs. McNeil-Claiborne?
Yes.
Does anyone wish to be recorded as a no vote? Seeing none, that's unanimous. And on to Resolution F, which was added.
Thank you. Ratification of the bargaining agreement, correction officers, local 2062 union, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Pleasant McNeil-Claiborne, we have a tentative agreement in our packets. You can review that. If people need an executive session to discuss any terms of that, we can. There's some of it we can discuss in open session. Dooley.
Has the union done their ratification yet?
Yes, they have.
Then it might be appropriate for us to have in this resolution what the general percentage salary adjustment is. It's nice to have that in our resolutions when we're able to.
I don't have any problem with that.
Okay, we can add that. Any further questions, Martha?
Well, for the public, can we say what that is?
Yes.
It's 2.25 over a one-year contract.
Great. Are we ready to vote? I think we should wait for one more legislator. Okay. All in favor of Resolution F? And those opposed? That passes with two opposed. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Just for the public, the duration, January 1st, 2009 through December 31st, 2009. So the 1 year expires on December 31st of this year.
Right. Great. Thank you.
No further report, Monday, 3:30, we will have our next budget committee meeting. And as the county administrator noted already, he will be there with his suggestions for action by the committee on getting us through the end of 2009 and things that we would look to do in the future. Unless there's some questions, that would conclude. The budget. Thank you, Mike. The budget calendar is out and in final form. And let me just say that clearly there have been questions to me and to Kathy about different changes that we have been suggested to make. And, you know, I submit this to you with some considerations that people have made to us and some that clearly I have not. And it seems to me What the major concern that I have is getting the largest number of legislators to come to the meetings, and that is why we have most of the meetings scheduled at 5 o'clock, and to me that makes the most sense. And as I look around the room and see what people are doing in their daylight hours, and hopefully that was what I was trying to accomplish there. There were a couple of other questions that came up, and we tried to respond to them, but I think we've done the best we can, and comparing it to the last two or three years, it's very similar with the exception of changing some of the times.
I do believe we're going to attempt to have them all videotaped or, you know, put on tape so that if you can't attend one, you can look at the tape later on. Leslyn, you had a question, then Frank.
Actually, my question was about what you're holding up. So the thing that says draft 3 that I just scratched up on, all that stuff, that's no good anymore?
Well,
everyone
got a copy of the final?
No.
Okay, the final draft is not out yet. Is that what you're saying?
When
are we going to get that?
The final calendar will be the same as draft number.
Yeah, the same as the one you have.
There won't be any changes.
Oh.
Yay.
It'll just say
draft
final.
3 is the final.
Yeah.
Draft
3. Okay. There is no draft.
Just the title will change from 2 from to final. Frank, did you have a question? I see Julie's hand.
We had a discussion about back-to-back meetings. Was that not?
Yeah, it was considered, but we've done it before, and I think we should continue it.
So can you redistribute clean versions of draft 3?
Okay. Well, it'll now be final, yes.
Yeah, I mean, as...
Yes, I will.
Thanks.
And I saw Dooley, then Leslyn, and Jim again.
I wondered if these meetings were going to be broadcast. Not taped, but broadcast.
My memory is they're not live broadcasts, but they are taped, and I don't believe Jim Blizzard has any plans to telecast, to make them available to the public to come view them or to have us have copies.
Well, since they are scheduled from, as my recollection of draft 3 is that every meeting is from 5 to 8, which wipes out people with responsibilities for feeding other people pretty completely, I would like the opportunity to be able to at least have that as background at home. If I have to miss coming in, I prefer that to watching a tape.
Marcia, do you have a comment on that? Marcia Lentz, our public information officer.
I recall past practice, some of the sessions are televised, others aren't. We often have conflicts with the City of Ithaca, with Common Council, and its meetings and budget process.
Right,
We have in the past televised those when we can.
Okay, thank you for clarifying. Leslyn?
So, just as a follow-up to Marcia, so is someone going to check with the city and so we know what days those are for those of us who might not be able to make an evening that we can actually watch it?
Marcia, why don't you work with Jim to get on this calendar which ones will be televised? Jim is popping his
head. Yes, I will do that. In the past, I've worked with Ithaca City Clerk Julie Holcomb to coordinate all of this.
But that wasn't my original question.
Jim, I've been putting all of them on DVD and on videotape and putting them online. So whether or not we go live or have reruns, there are copies that will be online.
Online to view. Great. That's a great resource. Thank you, Jim. I've lost track. Leslyn wanted to have her original question hasn't been asked.
Right. So it's not a question. One of the things I remember in previous years for the back-to-back committee thing is that we've also asked committees that if there really isn't crucial business to conduct, that if committees didn't have to meet, then they have to meet. For example, on October 15th for my F&I meeting, F&I starts at 3:30 and sometimes ends at about 6 o'clock. There's a 5 o'clock start time there for that meeting, so I just wanted to note that, and it might be the same thing for a few other committees as well. And I don't know what that means if we actually do have real business to do. I'll try my best to cut things short, but I don't know. We might have to push the budget a little bit.
Okay. I have, I believe it was Jim, then Carol.
I just want everyone to understand that while doing this, with Kathy, who is just obviously great to work with. I have something invested in it, not a whole lot. My goal is not to annoy everyone on the county legislature. My goal is to get as many people to all the meetings that I can possibly do. And I guess I'm concerned about is that I've felt some anxiety about doing this, and I can't imagine what it's going to be when we actually are dealing with numbers.
Thank you for this effort. And Carol?
I was going to
you preempted me, Jim. I just wanted to thank Jim and Kathy for working with all of us as we gave you, as each of us gave you a hard time in a different way about our needs and with very good rationale about why it should or shouldn't be earlier, later, split, not split, contiguous with the other meetings and not contiguous with the other meetings. It was an impossible task. And then I would like to propose that we buy enough equipment to put two-way communication over the new broadband access into everybody's houses so that anybody who can't be there in the future can attend electronically.
We should put cameras in there. Houses, too.
Let me remind people that the change from last year. Last year we had 10 meetings scheduled. They were 4 hours each. This year we have 13 meetings scheduled. They are 3 hours each. Total number of hours is roughly the same, but we have 7 meetings for presentations, so there's more hours for presentations, a little bit less for voting, and a little bit less for revisits. So if we are on schedule, we will finish right around Halloween.
Was that in honor of our new county administrator?
No. It was actually feedback from department head meeting on June 22nd about optimizing our presentation time so everyone gets an equal share, educating us about the impacts of what they're asking about.
I do want to say...
That concludes my report.
I do, too, actually appreciate, and since you wouldn't get my little scratchers, you know, the consideration of that time frame, although it's difficult for many of us in all kinds of respects, you know, I do appreciate the later time frame as well, so thank you.
I think we're ready to move on to Public Safety Committee. Martha Robertson, Chair.
We haven't met since the last legislature meeting. We will meet on August 17th at 2:30. And I know a couple of people will be out working around town, so the three of us who can make it, don't get sick, please. Just one little piece of information. Dina Bodner from Social Services, I believe emailed Michelle, and then Michelle forwarded to everybody else a memo about her 2009 ATA program evaluation, the plans to do this, including a timeline of what she's going to do and how, and to end up in January with a presentation and final report to the committee. So, and she has asked people to look this over, and any questions that you have, anything in particular you'd like answered in this evaluation, please contact Dina. She's interested in incorporating your feedback and making sure she covers the basis that you're interested in. That's my report.
Thanks. If there's no questions.
Oh, I want to thank Frank for returning the previous evaluations. Yeah.
Were they red penned and highlighted?
I was not allowed to do that.
Oh.
But see, some of the pages are dog-eared.
Okay. On to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean, Claiborne Chair.
WDIC, I don't remember the date, but anyhow. Oh, thank you, Karen. But here is something that came up at one of our WDIC meetings and I want all of you to be aware of. And as we were talking about live feed, when people are not here, I'm reminded that one of the questions that we are pondering, and we sent it also to, I think, the administrative team or staff, is we have a disclaimer about access to meetings for those with disabilities. And it's one of the things that we need, it was brought up at a WDIC meeting, that we need to be really fast-forward and talking about what needs to happen. We know about interpreter services, and what's the process? I don't know, you know what the process is, but there are other areas that people may need access so that they are, we have an open government and open meetings and access to everyone that we need to continue to talk about. So I don't know if the county administrator, if there's been any more discussion among the senior staff around this, but I do want legislators to be aware of this. If we have this disclaimer on our meeting notices, that it's something that we need to work on really developing a process for how do we allow this access to happen. So whether it's closed captioning, interpreter services, any number of things, we need to really that's going to be one of the things we're trying to fast forward to get some action on.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Dooley?
Did you say there is a disclaimer now?
I don't know if it still is. Well, we ask in the meantime that we perhaps remove it, but I don't know if it's still there. But there was.
What did it say?
If you need accommodations, I don't remember what the thing says. Something like if you need accommodations, access in our meeting or participating in the meeting, it will be provided. I don't remember. It's something like that. I'm mixing words, but it's something like that.
And where did this appear?
On our meeting notices that go out, wherever they go out, online and elsewhere, because it was brought up by someone who actually had it. It was on paper as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, it's a worthwhile topic, even though we may not be taking it off temporarily. Carol Chalk.
But isn't there access to this building? Isn't there a ramp on the side? And
a variety of other accommodations.
A variety of other things that we need to also talk about.
Thank you, Leslie.
So it's just a heads up.
On to Legislative Rules and Procedures Committee, Dooley Kiefer, Chair.
Well, at our last legislative meeting, I promised you all that we would be sharing a portion of the rules with our recommended changes, and that's still going to happen. I hope it will happen within a week. It will certainly happen before the next legislature meeting. You'll have it in your hands.
For review or for voting?
At your pleasure.
Okay. We'll have to have a chat. Any other questions for Dooley? Move on to Health and Human Services Committee. Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Health and Human Services Committee has not met since the last board meeting. We'll be meeting again on the 11th at 3:30. A couple of reminders to committee members. At the Budget Committee meeting on Monday, the 10th, there'll be a discussion on the rural feeder proposal that was presented at our last committee meeting. And questions and comments on that proposal are needed at this time. I've asked for a response and some input from TCAT because there are some issues that they are concerned about with regard to this particular proposal. I guess Jim ducked out of the room for a minute. I'm going to do my best to come to the Budget Committee meeting on Monday as the Vice Chair of the TCAT Board, but also as the Chairman of the Health Committee. The other item, and I think Joe is taking it into consideration, I remind this board that I've asked for one of our sessions, our public board of, legislative sessions where we receive presentations, that we have an update from the appropriate parties, and I think it would be Ed Marks, on the status and of the new building, the new health department building. And that should include perhaps an executive session, the status of the disposition of the Biggs building, considering that that has been included, its sale of that property, if it proceeds, is included in the equation of reducing the cost to the new building, which unfortunately we didn't have the luxury of at the time that we were coming forward with our proposal.
We can schedule that for one of our future meetings.
We should have that in a, I don't know, what is that session called, Mike? It's one of the public
presentations.
Thank you.
Okay. Kathy Lucerera.
I'd just like to mention, because I was reading over the budget agenda, and for the legislators who might be interested, from what I can tell, one of the things that was brought up by Joe Turcotte at TCAT is in the rural feeder budget as presented, it doesn't include something that TCAT would have to include, and that's deadhead hours, hours that 6 to 7 hours that are not reimbursed. That's just a portion of it. So this is the kind of thing that TCAT as a transit provider deals with all the time, and I think the county would be well served to take these things into account as it puts together a budget for rural service.
Thank you. If there's no further questions for Health and Human Services Committee, we'll move on to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
No report. We're going to meet on the 20th.
And your resolution?
I do have a resolution that's a carryover from the last time. Approval of amended bylaws and increase in membership at your service board.
This is a revised one in our package.
It is a revised version.
That's moved. Who would like to second? Julie Pfeiffer seconds. And is there discussion? Kathy Lucerera?
I'm going to support this. I just want to express my disappointment in the resolve that of the 8 voting members, all will be residents of Tompkins County, with the exception of the Cornell University representatives. It worries me any time we insert an exception. I believe that we should, as much as possible, try to have a residency requirement in all of our boards. I'll still support this. I know that it was a product of a lot of collaboration. I'd just like to encourage us, whenever we put these things together, to do what we can to see that we encourage local representation.
Thank you. Any further comment? Are we ready to vote? All in favor of the revised Air Service Board Resolution D? And any opposed?
Thank you very much.
It's unanimous. Thank you very much. Thank you, Leslie. On to Government Performance and Workforce Relations Committee. Nathan Shinagawa, Chair.
I have a very brief report. We will be meeting not this Friday, but the following Friday. And at the very beginning of our meeting, at exactly at 3:30, we're going to have a presentation about the HR and payroll project, IT project, that will be happening. And the vendor, one of the preferred vendor, will be actually coming in and doing a demonstration of the software for everybody. So actually, it'd be best if as many legislators could attend that to see what that looks like there at the meeting, because the vendor will have to travel, and they're making special travel arrangements to get there. Also, we would like to, at that meeting, be able to vote on a resolution regarding the HR payroll project.
Okay.
Am I missing anything, Greg? Okay. Right. And so other than that,
you'll be recommending our representative to the Health Consortium Board as well.
That's right, yes. And so we will also be discussing who we will be bringing forth as both our board member and our alternate.
Yes. Okay.
And also discussing lots of policies.
Yes.
Any policies, but we'll talk about that at the meeting.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any further questions for Nathan? We have no individual member filed. Who would like to move the minutes of the previous meeting, which is July 7th? Frank Proto and Martha seconds. All in favor of the minutes? Any opposed? That's unanimous. We have an item of unfinished business, Resolution 133 from our previous meeting. This is supporting the New York State Fair Pay Act. This was postponed. And is it? Would like to move to lift it from the table. Nathan moves it, and Kathy seconds.
Yep.
And all in favor of lifting it from the table? Any opposed? 1, 2, 3 opposed to lifting. It's now before us for re-discussion. Nathan.
Okay, so I said that I would go and do some research on these bills and report back to all of you about it for further discussion. Basically, there's two bills the main bill that we're talking about is A3911, but there's also A2351, and there's also the Senate numbers for those. Both of them basically accomplish the same thing with actually very similar language. A3911, New York State Fair Pay Act, what it does is it changes the labor law. And it changes the labor law so that we acknowledge equal pay applies the same language that exists under the Equal Pay Act of 1963 in New York, where there would be equal pay within a job based on the composite of skills, efforts, responsibility, and work conditions, that within a job that there would be equal pay. Of course, still acknowledging seniority and merit and all those things. What this change does is it uses that same criteria, but across job titles. And so, this would be, for example, an emergency services operator versus a fire dispatcher, in positions like that. What A2351, which is actually Assemblywoman Lifton's bill, it does basically the same thing, but it changes the executive law. The human rights law within the executive law to do it. So it's those two different approaches. But both legislations do not lower anybody's pay. They give, like the Lifton bill gives 3 years for employers to comply if they're found in violation of it, as long as they say that they're having some sort of plan to remedy it. And as I said again, it respects seniority and merit. Now, it is a little hard it's harder to compare jobs between job titles, much harder than it is within a job title. What the legislation asserts is that, you know, even though, you know, you could say, you know, it's comparing apples versus oranges. Well, with apples and oranges, there are still things like vitamins and calorie content and other kind of criteria that you can't find to actually make a decent comparison. And so what it's trying to say is that that type of work needs to be done across job titles in hopes that employers in New York State will do that. So that's basically what I have. a little bit more detail, a lot more detail than before, which I know is one of the main objections last time.
Thank you. I have Dooley, then Frank, then Kathy.
Last time this was discussed, some of my colleagues expressed surprise that such additional law might be needed because haven't we already passed those laws at the federal level? And although I don't have any examples to give, I looked again at the findings at the beginning of these bills where the state legislature says that they have found that in spite of existing federal law and state law, discrimination in pay continues. And that's why these are needed. So.
Thank you. Frank Proto?
This perhaps is a question for Joe or for John. How would this apply to our county employees? I can't imagine that we're in violation of this for our county employees.
Who'd
like to take that question?
Well, it's my understanding the county went through an exercise that was intended to address issues like this several years ago. So if anything, this county has kind of stepped up, even in the absence of this kind of legislation, to address those issues. So I don't know that it would affect substantially the county.
So a question for Nathan. You mentioned employers. I assume some of those are private side. But what about is this primarily to address potential violations in employment in state jobs?
Oh, yeah, it applies, yeah, definitely.
So do they need encouragement from us to do the right thing? Since we've already done it.
Yes. I think so. I don't know how much I can go to, but yes.
The answer yes is fine.
I'll say yes. I'll say yes. Thank you, Francis.
Kathy Lucivera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I supported this before, and I'll support it now. I mentioned Alice Cook before. When I came to work at Cornell, I became aware of Alice Cook, who devoted her life to bringing forward every year as much as possible this kind of equal pay legislation because in some industries more than others, but rampant across employment, there has been a disparity. There's, for example, in nursing and healthcare, there were orderlies, and those folks got paid a little bit different than women who had very similar, almost identical job duties, but got paid a whole lot less. In dining, there have been very similar job titles, but different pay and slightly different responsibilities in office work. I just want to be clear that there's been a history, not just in certain industries, but across employment, of coming up, especially across gender, making women get paid less for the same job than men do. I think it's really important that this be codified, especially at this time when there's so much financial uncertainty. That's when perhaps companies that are desperate might be tempted in the absence of such legislation to resort to these kinds of things. And I just want to lastly say that bona fide occupational qualification jobs, the only one I can think of right now is a restroom attendant, will still retain their separate titles. In the old days, for example, firefighters made the case that, and I'm using that because it's in the news, made the case that it was a bona fide occupational qualification because of the weight that they had to lift, and Supreme Court cases made it clear that if you could lift the weights, it didn't matter what your gender was. If you can do the job, you deserve the pay. As a woman in a non-traditional job, this legislation is near and dear to my heart. I've followed it for years, and I'm happy to see New York State, I hope, deciding to put some bite into this, and would like to see the federal government follow suit as soon as possible.
Thank you, Kathy. I have Jim next. Jim Dennis? Martha, then Mike Sigler.
I just want to say I appreciate the extra couple of weeks to look into this some more and the extra detail from Nathan. So thank you very much, and I'm ready to support this.
Mike Sigler.
I'm going to support this, too. And in part, I'm going to support this in large part because I think it's gender neutral, actually. I've read through all the legislation. And while many people believe that this will, you know, increase just pay for women, I think it will also just level, not even level the playing field, I think. You know, the door swings kind of both ways. For years, male nurses were paid less than women nurses. And I can point to a number of fields like that. So considering it's gender neutral, you know, right now I think we have to appreciate some of the progress we have. There are far more women in college today than men. There are the women that are living in cities like New York City are getting paid more than men on average. So there has been a lot of change within the financial world when it comes to men and women and their relationship thereof. So I'm going to support this meeting. Thank you very much for waiting for the 2 weeks.
Thank you, Michael. Are you ready to vote?
Yeah. No, go ahead.
All in favor of Resolution 133, supporting New York State Fair Pay Act. Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nathan. I'm going to be asking. For an executive session for purposes. I'm going to be asking for an executive session for purposes of personnel. And other than that, who'd like to move to go into executive session? Frank moves it. Jim seconds. All in favor? Anyone opposed? That's unanimous. We will not be coming back into open session for any business after that.
I'll tell you what, Nathan.
Yes.
Yeah. Start limiting
5 minute break to break down the cameras.
We start limiting lawyers' pay.